You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
T.C. Boyle has specialized in writing about people in bizarre situations, and his ninth collection of short fiction, Wild Child, will not disappoint. It includes a woman who finds a tiger in her California garden, a couple who clone their dog, an alcoholic who asks his 12-year-old daughter to drive when he's too drunk, and a man who has to choose between delivering a transplant organ and digging out the victims of a mudslide. It's published by Viking. I'm very pleased it has brought Tom Boyle back to our show today. Hi.
Hi, Lenny.
And I no longer say Corragosin.
We don't have to stumble over that anymore. I'm just TC forever.
The problem with Corragosin for me was the spelling of it, not the saying of it. You begin this book with an epigraph from Henry David Thoreau, "In wildness is the preservation of the world." Why did you choose that quotation?
It's interesting. You know, I just write stories in two periods, before and after a novel, and they're about anything that occurs to me and anything I want to explore, and then I put them together. So they don't necessarily have a thematic link, but in this case, they do, because it's anchored by the Wild Child novella about the enfant sauvage of France in the Napoleonic era, and many of the stories do talk about us and our animal natures and animals, other animals, and also how we are subject to the whims of nature.
So these stories involve dogs, cats, scorpions, rats, and as I said, a tiger. What happened? Did you have a theme in mind, or did this just occur to you?
More and more I'm writing about this, that we, the separation between our animal selves and our intellectual selves and how we fit into the environment. The tiger is so interesting. This was a few years ago. It was during one of our rainy periods in Los Angeles. And in Moore Park, there was a warning put out that a tiger was loose. And they didn't know where it came from, what it was doing. People had to stay inside. It turned out that some pet owner had owned this tiger, which was declawed, and it got loose. Isn't that so crazy, you know? A tiger in Los Angeles.
Well, all of these things, these animals that or our desire to make things into pets, do connect to the title story, The Wild Child, about a feral boy discovered living in a forest in France in 1797. Francois Truffaut made a movie about this kid, didn't he?
Exactly. Some of your older listeners may remember this, Lenny. I saw the movie when it came out.
You're making me feel so old.
But I'm sure the young folks want to hear this, too. I saw the movie when it came out in its period. And while I was writing the Wild Child novella here, I thought, I should see this again. And I did order one, and I possess it. But I didn't watch it because I felt it might color what I was doing. And I still haven't watched it because now I'm afraid it will interfere with my pleasure in my version.
But it's the same. Gee, why didn't I stick that detail in?
It is the same story, though, essentially.
And is this something that's easy to research? Was a lot written about him at the time?
There are two contemporary books about the story, and I cite those authors in my acknowledgments. And I took most of the information from them. It's an historical incident. This, for those who don't know, in the Napoleonic era in France, a feral child was captured in the woods of Aveyron in the south of France.
Now, how did he come to be living in the forest?
No one knows. However, he had a big slash across his throat, and I see it in the way of those Grimm's fairy tales where the wicked stepmother leaves the Hansel and Gretel in the woods because they can't feed them anymore. I think something like that.
Maybe
the mother tried to kill him and didn't have quite the heart and felt he was bleeding and dying, but he somehow survived and grew up as an animal, pre-linguistic. He never learned to speak, and he lived as an animal until he was captured and brought to Paris as a sensation.
And your story follows the efforts of various doctors to civilize Victor. Do you think he would be treated differently today?
You know, there is some question as to whether he might have been autistic. Certainly he was not mentally incapacitated, judging from what his Dr. Itard discovered in trying to teach him language through the techniques used for the deaf. He was at the Institute of Deaf and Mute in Paris. So I suppose we would be more accommodating today, but I don't know if once you've passed the period in which you can acquire language, it may be impossible even today to acquire language as he was captured when he was 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. So I don't think so.
But I was thinking about how this fits in with a couple of the other stories, Question 62 and 1300 Rats, which also involved domesticating wild animals. Why do you think people are driven to turn tigers or snakes or a feral boy into something like a pet?
Because we have our roots in nature, but we try to deny it, sitting in our radio studios and wearing our clothes. After all, we are just big apes who wear clothes so we don't have to rape, kill, and eat each other every minute of every day.
I've always wanted to be a bonobo.
Yeah, they have a lot of fun, don't they? Unfortunately, their environment is shrunk, and by the time our children are grown, they will be extinct. I'm fascinated by our animal nature and to place us in that context.
And there are other things that we try to control and can't. Wildfires, mudslides. You in California, of course, are aware that there were just recent mudslides, weren't there?
We had, thank God, after 3 years of drought, we had a whole week of rain last week, but 2 weeks ago. And after the huge fires we had this fall, obviously now there's nothing to hold the dirt in.
Well, you'd think that after all of this experience with these things, whether it's taming animals or taming nature, that we wouldn't fail so often. In fact, we always seem to fail, don't we?
We do. And
except the circus trainers who get cats to jump through hoops.
Oh, God. I mean, wow. I don't even know where to begin. We could talk for hours about this. I will say the fires, though, are utterly terrifying. Last time you and I talked, it was when I came through with the women last mm-hmm. year. Which is about Frank Lloyd Wright, and I live in his first California house, made entirely of redwood. It had its centennial last year. Just as we put the finishing touches to the restoration, the Tea Fire broke out a week later, right sitting on the hill above the house. I was extremely lucky in that the wind shifted to the west and blew it away from us. 241 other houses burned down that night. It is just horrifying. aside to this, when we moved up to Santa Barbara 18 years ago, the first week we were there was the big earthquake in Northridge, 70 miles away. And yet it rocked the house, and I sprang out of bed. And the first thing I said to my wife was, I told you we should have moved back to New York.
Well, a story that I read recently in The New Yorker takes place in upstate New York and
yes.
around one of the lakes. I don't know whether it's Lake George or some other lake.
No, not quite that far up, Lenny. I grew up in Peekskill, so I'm thinking in A Death in Kitchewank, it goes back to my 1987 novel, World's End, about the history of that area. And this is a Jewish colony called Mohegan Colony, and it's Mohegan Lake I'm thinking of. And this family was very, very close to me. I've changed the names and the situation exactly. It's a memory story, and I've had a lot of positive reaction to it.
And you've done something that I don't remember seeing before. You're writing the story through the eyes of one of the characters, a woman, a mother, and every so often you inject yourself.
Yeah.
Or some character who's saying,
It's me. I appear in this story. I'm always looking for a new format for a story. This is sort of like a compressed novel. It could have been much longer, and I wanted it as a story. And so by inserting myself in an editorial way, I was able to give information and comment on it while yet keeping the story within the confines of a short story.
And jump a few years.
And jump many years, yes.
Now, that you've written about historical characters, as we mentioned, Frank Lloyd Wright, mm-hmm. also Alfred Kinsey, John Harvey Kellogg, Stanley McCormick, Mungo Park. In this book, we have Victor of Aveyron. But when you're writing that kind of story about people you knew when you were a kid or have known on and off throughout your lives. Mm. Do you think of those as historical stories as well?
Oh, what a great question. Yes, they are historical stories, but they're not...
You don't have to research them.
I don't have to research them. They're not based on figures from history. And I love these figures from history because I find some oddities of history and I want to present them to you whole because I love them. This is different, though. This is a personal experience and something that's moving me internally in a totally different way.
But in both cases, what you're doing is you're taking real people and then you are inventing their interior lives.
Yes, I think that's what novelists are supposed to do. And as we've said probably in our conversations before, I do believe that a novelist should try to stretch him or herself and try to be able to inhabit anybody
My guest is T.C. Boyle, whose latest book is Wild Child and Other Stories. It is published by Viking. You mentioned that you were here last time to talk about the women. Do you write stories while you're working on a novel, or do you have to finish one and then go on to the others?
You know, I'm totally rigid, and I only do one thing at a time. And people say, if you do the same thing each day, that you're a stick in the mud and it's boring. No, it's called efficiency, Lenny. I would never allow myself to
focus
do two,
as well.
Focus, thank you. I would never do two things at once because I would be afraid that when I ran against a roadblock in one piece of work, well, I would turn to the other and et cetera, back and forth, and never do anything. So the stories in this book I wrote in two periods, prior to the women and after the women. And now, of course, I've finished a new novel, so I'm in another story phase, and A Death in Kitchewank, and in Harper's this month also, My Pain is Worse Than Your Pain, are some of the new stories that I've been writing.
And they're different? They're not like the stories that we have in Wild Child, which all seem to have some kind of thematic connection?
Yes, they're very different. I just write things. There'll be one in the Atlantic, but not till next year. And it's called The Silence. I had read, as you probably did in the paper 6 months ago, of some Buddhists making a retreat in the desert with a vow of silence, 3 years, 3 months, 3 days of silence. How would that work? I have never shut up for 1 minute in my life. So I wrote a story to find out, you know?
Well, you mentioned pain, and one of the new stories, a story in this book is called Sin Dolor, Without Pain. Mm. It's about a freak of nature, a boy who doesn't feel pain, and the doctor tries to study him. Was that also inspired by a true story?
Yes, yes. Again, this was something I read in the news a couple of years ago, and it actually took place in Pakistan, where it's just a genetic mutation where this child cannot feel any pain whatsoever. And So
what were his nerve endings doing? I mean, was he feeling anything?
He could taste, he could smell. But he couldn't feel any conventional pain of any sort. Break a leg, he could walk on it. Stick needles through his eyeballs, anything. But, of course, he could be damaged.
Yeah.
And so
this could have a positive or a negative side.
It's primarily negative. But, of course, doctors wanted to study him, so if they could manipulate this genetic mutation, perhaps they could use it as a pain device for people with pain.
So you're attracted to these weird but true news stories.
Well, also because it depends on what they're about. Now I can meditate on pain. Why do we have pain? What does pain mean? Is it good or bad, etc.? And so obviously this boy has two types of pain. He doesn't feel physical pain, but he has emotional pain because his father's using him as a circus freak, mm-hmm. you know, to stand there and stick skewers through his cheeks so that people can give them money in a hat, you know.
In another story, Admiral, a couple clone their beloved dog who's died.
Yeah. And this was one of the first cloned dogs commercially. It happened a few years ago. I think the price has dropped now, Lenny, but it was $250,000 for a dog. But cats are a lot cheaper because their genetics
And you can really do it?
Oh, yeah, you can do it.
People are cloning their dead pets?
Oh, yes, indeedy. But I think the price has fallen to a mere $175,000 to reclone your mutt.
Well, you can go to Bidawi and get a dog for practically nothing. And
exactly.
It would be a new experience.
Exactly.
I always wonder about that. So you said that when you were writing this recent story, it could have been a novel, but you wanted it to be a short story. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Because you were in the short story writing mode?
Exactly. Or? Yeah. And I don't feel that I wanted to go there and expand it in that way. Again, I'm very rigid, and when I have an idea for a story, it has never grown into a larger work. This is going to be a story, and when I'm doing a larger work, I'm prepared to do a larger work. So I don't think so. Although I could see that very close readers of my work will know that this family, this is written from the mother's point of view, and I appear in it as a 22-year-old. Well, my best friend, this is sort of my adoptive family, you know, my best friend is part of this, and he has appeared in two of my stories.
Lester.
Yeah, and he himself has written a novel, by the way, not published yet. And he said that when he has his author's note, it's going to say, I began my literary career as a fictional character.
Well, your characters always seem to be fully developed people. Do you work them out first before you start writing them? You've got a man in this collection who delivers transplant organs, a small-town doctor who collects scorpions, creationist. Are at a school board meeting, among others. Do they arrive fully formed?
Yes. I know this is maddening for all the writers out there to hear this who want advice. There is no advice. It just happens. You know, I never program anything. I don't have any outlines. I simply start. I meditate on something. I see a picture, a line starts, and I just work it over and over and try to get into this spell and see where it will go.
So you don't even develop a backstory that either comes or doesn't as the story develops?
Any one of these stories, Lenny, might have taken me 2 or 3 weeks in the initial writing, and I'm constantly refining as I go along and forgetting about it in the afternoon and maybe dreaming about it or unconsciously figuring it out. It's a puzzle. It's a great puzzle, and the thrill is when it does come together.
Now, you are a very gregarious writer. You've been on the show many times. You've been around on a lot of talk shows. You seem to love doing the tour.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about why J.D. Salinger chose to be so reclusive? Mm.
I spoke to the press about this yesterday. He was a very important writer for my generation, for all generations, I guess. But in particular, when we were young and beginning to write, it was Hemingway and Salinger, the short stories of which, and of course The Catcher in the Rye, that turned us on. I can't imagine. Everybody is an individual. Everyone is different. And of course, most writers are introverts. This is why they're writers. They don't want to deal with anybody. But, you know, I'm a little different. I used to front a rock and roll band. And last night I appeared on stage, and will tonight, in a new suit, which is bright flame red. You know? Come on, why not? Have fun with it. But apparently some people
What will you be doing in this red suit?
Oh, I'll be performing, of course.
Singing?
No, I will be reading my work. Oh. But I don't want to call it a reading because that connotes boredom. I will act it out, and it will be wonderful.
And I'll talk about that in just a moment.
So it takes all types. And I feel bad for the writers who are forced to go on and do shows and so on and give readings when that doesn't accommodate their personality.
Yeah. Well, some of them you understand right away. In other cases, someone like Alice Munro, who is reluctant to do much, when she appears, she is such a charming person. You wonder, why doesn't she do this all the time? She's as wonderful in person as she is as a writer.
Because we each need a private life, and you can draw the boundaries of how private or how public you're going to be.
Just one more thing. You've been teaching at USC. You've been teaching writing for 30 years.
32 years, Lenny.
So have you seen major changes in the way people have been writing over those years?
Well, I'm not good at math, so I think I started like Jesus in the temple. I think I was about 12 when I started teaching there. No, not really. What's interesting is that my students are artists, and they're coming to me for art. So there's always a great pool of talent, and from the beginning to now, you write whatever you like, and I'm your coach, and I respond to it.
You said you've completed a novel.
Mm-hmm. It's called When the Killing's Done. It's set on the Santa Barbara Channel Islands. It has to do with two couples battling over the turf out there. For those who don't know, the Channel Islands off Santa Barbara are now a national park, the least visited national park for this reason. In order to get there, you have to vomit over the back of a boat for 1.5 hours.
Sounds like a lot of fun. T.C. Boyle's latest book is a collection of short stories called Wild Child. It is published by Viking. Thank you so much for being with us again, John.
As always, Lenny, thanks for having me on the show.